It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Tonight at Bar Marco in Pittsburgh, the Science and Engineering Ambassadors Program presents Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Lungs, too, part of the series Climate Change Here and Now. The focus is on the origins and effects of atmospheric particles, unavoidable byproducts of the way our society creates and uses energy, but invisible to the naked eye. Here to talk about the deadly impact of these particles is Neil Donahue. He's a professor of chemistry, engineering, and public policy at CMU, and he studies the behavior of particulate matter in the atmosphere. Neil Donahue, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Glad to be here.
Let's start with the basics. Explain what atmospheric particles are.
Well, is what we're really interested in are what we call fine particles, which are really tiny particles that come from a whole mess of different sources, including smoke from buses, from cars and trucks, industry. And they're small enough that they can get all the way down into your deep lung and cause some damage and actually heart attacks.
And where do they come from? They
come from a variety of sources. The easiest thing to think of is smoke, though. So combustion, smoke, cars, wood fires, et cetera.
Just all of the things that are part of the trappings of our modern society.
Correct.
Now, we can't see them except on hazy days or in smoke from a fire. And why is that? Is it just because they're so small?
Basically, that's right. To give you a sense, they're about 100 times smaller than the diameter of one of your hairs. So they're just too small to see. But when you have enough of them, it's the haze that makes visibility get poor. So if you can't see downtown from Schenley Park, say, it's because there's so many particles in the air.
Well, as someone who grew up in Pittsburgh, I remember when you'd have the air pollution index, which we still have today, but it was more – I mean, they would give it to you as part of the weather, along with the humidity and the dew point and the barometric pressure. They'd say, oh, and by the way, the pollution and air pollution index. I remember sitting with a member of my family, my uncle, who was not from Pittsburgh, looking at this and saying, boy, we don't have that where we live, you know. It's kind of a slam at our industry. But in the 40 or so years since then, we've been told at least that there's less pollution or at least less industry polluting the air in Pittsburgh. So if that is true, then why do we still have this problem?
Well, there are two parts to that. The air is definitely cleaner. I grew up here around two. Grew up around here as well. So it is cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there's so many different sources that controlling all of them is difficult. So we have reduced a lot of pollution from sort of the obvious sources, but there's still a lot of other sources to go.
And so these are harmful, and despite the omnipresence of these particles and their recognized effects on public health and climate, you say that how they form and evolve in the atmosphere is poorly understood. How come?
It's mostly because there's so many different origins. So about half of the total amount of the fine particles, the total mass of the particles, comes from things like oxidation of sulfur dioxide that comes out of coal combustion. And we understand that quite well. The other half comes from the myriad sources of what we call organic material in the atmosphere. And that's wood smoke, that's car exhaust, truck exhaust, emissions from industry, and also emissions from things like gasoline fumes, also compounds that can come out of natural ecosystems, even things that get emitted by trees and other vegetation. So all of this stuff gets processed and oxidized in the atmosphere, and it's a complicated process that we're slowly working our way through toward understanding.
So is it a matter of over a period of years people have, climatologists or scientists or whomever have ignored this or just not had it at the top of the list of environmental concerns in terms of how do they prioritize them? You know, what's the deal?
No, it's very much known about. So fine particulate matter, PM2.5, is one of the priority pollutants that is regulated by the Environmental Protection Agency through what's called a National Ambient Air Quality Standard.
So is what is then misunderstood is how they are created? Is that where a debate comes in?
That's right. Exactly okay. What the sources are and exactly what we need to do to reduce the concentrations.
Gotcha. Now, first of all, I should remind our listeners that you can join our conversation if you have comments or questions about this. And we had a great many people weigh in when we did our show focusing on air quality concerns resulting from the operation at the Shenango Coke Works last week. And if you want to weigh in on this particular discussion, and if you have a question for our guest, Neil Donahue, you can call 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Again, our phone number, 412-246-2002. For your questions about particulate matter, how it's created, how it impacts the environment and our health, 412-246-2002, the number to call. And as I mentioned, Neil, last week we did a program which led to this discussion today, focusing on the air quality concerns resulting from the operation at the Shenango Coke Works. Explain the relation between the operation at Shenango, for example, and atmospheric particles.
So a place like Shenango, there are two issues in play. One is that when I was talking about the organic stuff that can come out of various sources, coke production is definitely one of those sources. So there's a lot of emissions from production of coke, coke oven gases that are often captured. If you see all the piping that goes from Clairton to the Edgar Thomson Steelworks, that's mm-hmm. the gases from producing coke. Some of those escape. They can get oxidized and produce fine particulate matter. So that's the direct source from the coke emissions. The other thing is that the Coke Works is in a valley, right? It's on Neville Island. And so the emissions can get kind of captured. And because of that, they don't disperse as much and you can get a more localized effect.
So is our topography part of the problem here? Just the peaks and valleys that we have in western Pennsylvania?
Yes, definitely.
Now, as I understand it, local levels of fine particulate pollution were within federal standards for the first time last year in 2013. So are we getting a handle? Is this indicative of our getting a handle on this problem?
Yes, it is partially. There's been steady progress. Pittsburgh has been routinely sort of at the tail end of the distribution of industrial cities in terms of pollution. So we are more polluted than other cities. But on the other hand, there has been steady progress in improved air quality, really all around the country. But there's
– So why worry? Why should we be concerned?
So the reason why you should be concerned is that even as we stand, about 50,000 people die in the United States every year from inhalation of fine particles.
Which
so that's
caused,
more than the
– What's the direct correlation to health concerns here?
The clearest one is heart attacks. So the simple way to put it is if you want to have a heart attack, you need to have two things. You need to have a cholesterol, so high cholesterol. That gives you sort of one part of the equation. And the other thing that you need or don't want is some sort of systemic inflammation. The key word is cytokine in the toxicology literature. So if you when your body has an inflammatory reaction and you have high cholesterol is when you tend to get severe buildup of plaque in your blood vessels and the coronary arteries and you get a heart attack. And so when fine particles deposit deep in the lung, that sets off a systemic inflammatory reaction. And there's a very high correlation between levels of fine particles and things like the data from implanted defibrillators show that when PM levels are higher, the defibrillators are actually activating more frequently.
Now that's very sobering. Now I'm worried. 412-246-2002 if you want to join our conversation with Neil Donahue of CMU, who studies the behavior of particulate matter in the atmosphere. Let's go to Mike in Pittsburgh. Mike, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, thank you. I have a question concerning the particulate matter. I actually work in an underground facility that has vehicular traffic to include buses, cars, trucks, etc. It's actually an old limestone mine, and we constantly complain about the smell of diesel smoke, et cetera, wafting into the work areas. What would you consider the risk of something like that, a working condition like that?
I always have to give the caveat that I'm the chemist who studies the way these things behave. But broadly speaking, the higher the concentrations, the higher the risk of the sort of effects that I was talking about there. And so It really depends on the concentrations. It depends on the levels that you have there, and you'd have to have a way of monitoring what those concentrations were.
Mike, you sound like you are concerned, and perhaps for good reason.
Yeah, we have approximately 600 people working in this facility, and the facility does come in and monitor the air, but usually, even though we're working in a kind of an enclosed area with air evacuators, there will be times when you can smell the diesel smoke coming into your work area, and some of the vehicles coming through are not using the low sulfur fuel, and so it gets quite toxic feeling at times. So we're a little concerned.
Well, what would your advice be for someone like Mike? I don't suppose, you know, finding a less hazardous profession is really an option, is it, Mike?
At this stage of my career, no.
So, and there probably are. And Mike, thank you for the phone call. Neil, there probably are a lot of people like Mike here in Pittsburgh, where Mike is from, who are working under these conditions. What are we going to see down the road, if not in the immediate future?
Well, one thing I can say about that is to give a little bit of a plug for the program that brought us here, which is the Science and Engineering Ambassadors Program that the National Academies of Science and Engineering put together. The idea is to get science and engineering experts who have been drawn from the universities, from national labs around like NETL and also from industry, together with opinion leaders in the Pittsburgh area in order to have a more informed conversation about these sorts of issues. And so broadly, one of the objectives is to make sure that whatever public policy decisions are made broadly decisions are made in the area are done so at least in the context of good information.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation. And we were scheduled to have Samuel Taylor, Director of Science and Engineering Ambassadors at the National Academy of Sciences here in Pittsburgh. And we regret that he was unable to join us, but we do have Neil Donahue here, who does extensive research as part of his work as a professor of chemistry at CMU. He studies the behavior of particulate matter in the atmosphere. And what are some of the industries that, in addition to Shenango, which we talked about, what are some of the industries that might be creating atmospheric particles?
The simple answer is anything that produces anytime you have combustion. Basically any place, and it's not just industry. You certainly have industrial emissions, and those are definitely part of the equation. Transportation is also a huge part of the equation. That includes personal vehicles and also transportation of goods, so trucks. In Pittsburgh, we actually also have all of the activity in the port, so the ships, the barges, the trains. It's all a source.
How is the research at CMU beginning to chip away at some of these unsolved problems?
There are two ways that we're working most intensively. Really, three ways. One is to understand this chunk, about half of the material that's organics associated with smoke and other emissions, because the chemistry is relatively involved. We're systematically working our way through the chemistry of those different sources. Another part of the story is that we run what we call air quality models, chemical transport models that reproduce the chemical conditions and do their best to reproduce observed concentrations. Those models have all these different sources in them, and so we can do our best to check that the understanding we think we have of these different sources matches up with what's observed, and that can get a better sense of the relative contributions of different sources. And then the third thing is that sometimes there are specific compounds that get emitted from specific sources that we can go out and identify. And so we can do a combination of measurements in the atmosphere of general concentrations, but then specific marker compounds. We can also try to basically fingerprint the emissions from different sources.
So these are part of some of the field experiments that you do?
Correct.
And these experiments, you collect all this data, and then in terms of trying to find solutions, what are the things that we can do going forward, looking at the future of industry, which we seem to be so dependent upon, and fossil fuel, which we don't seem to be able to get away from? Where are we headed, and what is the solution to solving this problem?
It depends a little bit on the source, but the most effective thing has been what you might call after treatment. And so, for example, let me take cars as an example. Cars and trucks have had a succession of standards on emissions. So your catalytic converters, in the case of diesel trucks and buses now, there are things called diesel particulate filters that are required to be on new diesel engines. And those have greatly lowered the concentrations of the emissions of the particles themselves, and also in most cases in the precursors to compounds that can produce what we call secondary aerosol down the road. So that's probably the most direct thing that can be done.
Let's say that we do all of the things that we can do to within reason to deal with the problem of atmospheric particles. Will that be enough? You know, if we have more people riding bikes, if we have more fuel efficient and cleaner burning cars, will that be enough, or does more have to be done?
At the end of the day, that's a policy question. So this is sort of an example of the interface that the
I'm just asking you to do the math.
That's right. Well, so the at present, there's very little indication that there's a what you might call a threshold level. And so when I said that approximately 50,000 people in the United States are dying from, as far as we know, mostly heart attacks from breathing in fine particles today, the best knowledge we have right now is that if we cut the pollution in half, that number would drop to about 25,000. So at the end of the day,
we have less of a problem, but we still have a problem.
Yeah, we still want, and so that always has to be part of the conversation. No different than getting flu shots. You know, what's enough? If there are about 30,000 deaths from flu, you want to inoculate people, get vaccines in, and push that number down. This is the same kind of story.
And when you talk about fine particulates, I get the sense that because of the fine particulates that show up in our air in Pittsburgh, and for other reasons, that Pittsburgh is from this particular standpoint is not a healthy place to live. I don't know. I don't know if there's another conclusion that we can arrive at there.
The conclusion you can arrive at is that the risk level here is somewhat higher than it is elsewhere. It's not incredibly dramatically so. It does.
Well, you're living here. I'm living here. Right. The people listening to this are living here, and yet, when you have these kinds of discussions, you end up saying to yourself, "Why am I living here?"
Well, but where would you go? So anywhere there are people, there are. There's fine particulate matter pollution, pretty much. If you want, and you could go to Beijing, they have 10 times the concentration or more that we have here. So there are many places in developing economies that have really, really severe air pollution problems. We have a problem here. We need to do something about it, but we are by no means alone. This is I like to say that air pollution is either a very local problem or a regional problem, and we've got a little bit of both.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation. Let's take one last call from Larry in Braddock Hills. Larry, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Neil Donahue.
Thank you very much. A great show. I appreciate you doing these types of shows, especially like 2 weeks in a row.
Thank you.
I have two questions, or I guess maybe comments. I live in Braddock Hills, the Edgar Thompson Steel Mills down the road, and apparently they monitored it. A lot of it's by sight. You know, how many emissions come out, they can just look at this stuff. Well, you should try standing out here like at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning, and you can't believe sometimes how much stuff they emit during the night when nobody's around. And sometimes it almost burns your nose up here. And it seems like they just seem to get away with it. And my other question, you know, like what's being done about that because they don't monitor at night. And the other thing everybody forgets about WTI over in Youngstown, Ohio, that people in Pittsburgh here fought so long to try not to get built but got built anyway in the early 90s, and how much stuff is coming from WTI over into Pittsburgh. That's my two questions.
All right. Well, thank you, Larry. And Neil, what can you say to Larry's questions here?
Well, let's see. I'll say three things. One is I bicycle through Braddock Hills a few times a week because I'm a cyclist and I like the hills. So I know the area you live in quite well. The main thing that you see at night is we were talking about the river basins. And what happens is the air gets trapped in there at night. And I should say that the air quality monitoring that's done by the county is there is continuous monitoring going on. So they do measure the levels. But mostly what's happened is it's gotten trapped. As far as regional pollution, yes, that's part of the mix. So as I said, it's either very local, and being near ET is an example of very local. And then all the sources really in the industrial Midwest do contribute to the air quality that we have in Pittsburgh.
All of the sources of industrial pollution in the Midwest?
Do contribute. That's right. So that if you have a nice, hazy, hot, and humid, high-pressure event, let's say in July or August, where it's clear and it doesn't rain for a week, all of the emissions, the particles leave the atmosphere basically when it rains.
And so, is that because weather moves west to east?
Yep.
Okay.
And in a high-pressure system, it's actually circulating in a clockwise direction, and it can get stuck over the eastern part of the United States because that's what they do. And so then basically you get emissions from a 1,000-mile diameter circle that are basically stewing in the photochemistry of a hot summer event.
I remember one summer day when it was raining as a kid, opening my mouth and sticking my tongue out, and my mother's telling me, don't do that. And I go, but Mom, it's only rain. And she knew. Steve in the Southside Slopes, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. And we'll take one. You are now the last call.
Okay. Well, it's a pretty quick question. I was just curious if black mold has mimics the effects of the particles that you were discussing. In other words, you know, does black mold pose a similar risk for inflammation of a system?
Hmm.
That's a good question. My immediate reaction is it's probably somewhat different. The responses to things like mold spores tend to be the immune system. Also, the spores are somewhat bigger. They're of a size where they tend to lodge up in your basically up in your nose. But they're certainly people can have very, very strong reactions to them. So it is something to be concerned about. It's a different issue, though.
Steve, thank you for that call. And Neil Donahue, thank you so much for your time joining us here today on Essential Pittsburgh. And again, we'll mention the tonight's public health and climate change event focusing on atmospheric particulates. It's an event of the Science and Engineering Ambassadors Program. Smoke gets in your eyes and lungs, too, at 6 o'clock at Bar Marco. And it will be a very interesting evening involving Ellis Robinson, who investigates the origins and effects of atmospheric particles, as does our guest Neil Donahue, who's been with us answering quite a few questions. He does extraordinary work at CMU, and you've done a great job here in our studios. Thanks so much for being with us, Neil.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much.
And coming up on Essential Pittsburgh, former New York Times columnist Bob Herbert on his book Losing Our Way, An Intimate Portrait of a Troubled America. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.